Thank you to BetterHelp for sponsoring this episode. We spend a lot of time talking about how important it is to take care of your mental health. Therapy is an excellent way to do that. BetterHelp is an affordable mental health care option that fits right into your busy schedule. Just answer a few quick questions about your needs and preferences, and BetterHelp will match you with one of the thousands of experienced mental health professionals in their network. You can talk to your therapist over text, chat, phone, or video. You get to pick what works best for you, your comfort, and your schedule. If you feel like your therapist isn't the right fit, BetterHelp makes it easy to switch to someone new at no additional cost. So give it a try and see why over 2 million people have used BetterHelp online therapy. BetterHelp is offering our listeners 10% off their first month of therapy. Just go to betterhelp.com/musicspeaks to get started. That's betterhelp, HELP.com/musicspeaks to get 10% off your first month of therapy.
Hey guys, we wanted to take a quick minute to tell you about our recent partnership with the Amazing Bones Coffee Company.
Let's face it, you're probably sick and tired of drinking that old plain Jane coffee brand every morning. Well, fret not, dear listener. Bones Coffee is here to kick your taste buds into high gear.
Bones Coffee has a wide variety of flavors to choose from, including maple bacon, peaches and spring, island grog, and my personal favorite, chocolate raspberry.
Once you become hooked on the coffee, you'll be excited to learn that they have plenty of merch options to choose from as well. T-shirts, mugs, tote bags, the list goes on.
You can buy their coffee in whole bean, ground, and even evil single serve options.
Guys, we wouldn't lie to you. This coffee is great, and we know that you're going to love it too, which is why we have partnered up with Bones Coffee, and now our listeners have an exclusive discount code.
Make sure to use the code MUSICSPEAKS at checkout for 10% off your order.
That's right, James. Go to bonescoffee.com to kickstart your new coffee addiction and use the code MUSICSPEAKS for 10% off today. If you're anything like me, free time is limited. So things like yard work are just not doable. And if you're also like me, you don't even own a lawnmower. That is why All Above Landscaping is the right choice. All Above includes a variety of options when it comes to your landscaping needs, including lawn installation, design, irrigation, debris removal, maintenance, and much more. If you're in the city of Sumter and you're looking for reliable service at a friendly price, give All Above Landscaping a call today. It's 803-464-7414. Mention that you heard this ad on this podcast and you'll get a special discount on your first service. Again, that's 803-464-7414. Call All Above Landscaping today. Like so many of you, we battle depression through life's ups and downs.
Music has always been the one thing we could rely on to get us through the tough times we all face.
Follow us on our journey as we discuss the healing power of music, share our stories through songs and lyrics,
interview musicians and other artists,
break down genres,
deep dive into band biographies,
and much, much more.
This is the Woodward Fail
Music Speaks Podcast
with Blake Mosley,
James Todd,
and Amanda Dolan.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Woodward Fail Music Speaks, where the podcast is where we fight depression with the power of music. I have another great interview today here with me, but I want to introduce to you her first. Her name is Erica Barba. Did I say that right?
You did. It was perfect.
Perfect, because sometimes I can't hardly talk anymore, you know? So Miss Erica is a poet, a lyricist, she plays guitar, and she composed music too in the past, hopefully the present more, you know? But she has a new book coming out. It's Stakes of Life, a biography of Violeta Parra by Erica Barba. And it's coming out to your shelf January 14th, 2025. Just in time for the release. Yeah, so how you doing, Miss Erica?
I'm very excited. This has really been my life's work. So to be able to be sort of looking at a cover behind me because I've got backdrop, and then to be able to talk to you about it is just such a privilege. I really, truly appreciate it. Thank you, James.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. And I didn't know anything about her until I looked it up because after I heard about you in this book. I heard her, because her song has been covered by many, many artists, you know, and the name of the song.
One of the joys.
And the name of the song escapes me, but Kacey Musgraves just recently covered part of her song, which is great.
In Spanish, it's called Gracias a la Vida, and the list, I think there's probably over 200 people that have covered her song so far. Kacey Musgrave is probably the most famous in the United States, but
yes.
I don't know, do you know the Buena Vista Social Club?
I do not. No.
Oh, well, the Buena Vista Social Club, they're from Cuba. And Omar Portuondo, who's the lead singer, she covered it. I mean, I could just go, Joan Baez from the United States covered it. I could go on and on. Placido Domingo,
I've heard of him before,
this is actually very moving. Yo-Yo Ma, I don't know if you know about the CD he put out during COVID, which was Soothe Us, and he actually did an instrumental version of the song for that particular scene.
So when I was looking you her up, but let's talk about you first before we dive deep into the book. When I heard that you played guitar, or when I read that you played guitar, I want to know. Okay, so you met. Your story is, for anybody who don't know, you had some Chilean friends when you were growing up, and they inspired you to play guitar, right? If I'm not, if I'm saying anything wrong, please correct me. Yeah. And they let you hear violin, some songs, and that's how I got interested in music, right?
Absolutely. Actually, if I could back up, because I wanted to say one thing before, and then I want to talk about my Chilean friends, because I have a nice story about them.
Okay,
but
thanks.
You know what's been very moving, so this is my book. Like this is the book I will write. I don't know if I'll ever write another one, and I've taken plenty of time to write this one. And it's been really wonderful in these last few weeks, or I would say maybe even last few months, to meet I'm so excited to meet people that didn't know her until they looked her up. Because the reaction is, I've been getting, and I hope I get more and more of this. I hope your listeners go and do look her up too. Yeah. When people look her up, they get really excited. They listen to her music. They look at her artwork and they go, how come I don't know this woman before? And that to me is really exciting, because why don't people know about her? And I'm really thrilled to be sharing, because she's just such a phenomenal and multifaceted artist. And I know we're going to talk more about her, but I just wanted to share how much fun it is to hear from people that they didn't know who she was, because that's kind of part of the work, right? Like, this is, but here I am on your podcast and we're talking about her. So how thrilling.
Right.
And I wanted to tell you a very, very nice story. I think it's a moving story. Let me tell you a little bit about this family, because I think it's important, it's important to me, so I'm sharing with you.
Okay.
So I'm in high school, and this will age me, but it's 1974, and some of your listeners might know this and some not, but there was a very violent military coup in Chile in a year before, on September 11th. So people call it the other September 11th. So September 11th, 1973, there's a military coup in Chile that overthrows a democratic government and installs a military dictatorship. His name is General Augusto Pinochet. He rules for the next 19 years, and it is brutal. And this Chilean family, they were already planning to come to the United States. So their exit was sort of, I guess you could call it, I don't know if there's such a thing as voluntary exile, but at least they weren't put in jail, forcefully removed, disappear, anything. They left the country legally, let's put it that way. And when they did, you have to imagine this military dictatorship. If you've ever seen pictures of Nazi Germany where they're making bonfires with books, that's what's happening in Chile. They're taking books out of people's houses. They're taking records out of people's houses, albums, LPs. Yeah. Yeah. They're building these fires and burning them. And so my friends, the people that became my friends in high school, what they did, they smuggled out protest music. So if you think about Bob Dylan, this is the same time period, really, right? So everyone knows about Bob Dylan. Bob Dylan, right?
Right, yeah.
So it's like the 60s in every country, in the 70s, and every country has sort of their Bob Dylan. So the Bob Dylan of Chile, his name is Victor Jara, and he's actually killed in the military dictatorship. So the kind of work that Bob Dylan is doing in the United States becomes a death sentence in Chile, really. And so what I wanted, so coming back to this family knew what was going on, was seeing it. And so what they did was they took all of their protest music and they went out and they bought military band music. And they very carefully took the band albums out, military band music out, put in their own albums, and then they very carefully ironed the sleeves shut, the plastic shut, so it looked like they had never been opened before. And that is how they smuggled out protest music from Chile
Wow.
to the United States. And they were very, involved in the resistance, and musicians from Chile that were happened to be touring at the time, so they were safe, would stay at their house. And so they were, it was both, I would have to say, a musical awakening for me, but also a political awakening. They went hand in hand, because I don't know if your listeners know this, but the United States government it was very involved in this military coup. It supported the military, the CIA did. Kissinger's famous for saying, "We can't let a country go socialist just because of the irresponsibility of its own people," which meant voters. So
Right.
voters voted for a socialist, and the United States came in and supported a military coup. So there's that. And so, but the nice story about this Chilean family is, so one of the people that taught me guitar, Miguel, he was my age. We're both, in high school. And for the last 40 years or so, I've been saying that Miguel taught me guitar. And I ran into one of his friends and she said, "Oh no, Miguel loves you. He says you taught him how to play guitar." So ever since, we've been fighting over who taught who.
Right, yeah.
And my theory is we were two stubborn teenagers and we taught each other.
There you go. There you go. Well, quick, we're both here again, but I read that you don't read, or you don't read music, you just sight read. Is that correct?
Well, no, I read music, but Violeta Parra just had no musical training, no
Okay,
classical.
so maybe I read it backward. Okay, but yeah, so yeah.
I learned, I know how to read music. I mean, not very well. I'm not a classical musician. I'm more a folk musician, but
Right,
yeah.
yeah. Okay, so when you taught him guitar, or he taught you guitar, that, what kind of guitar were you learning? Did you learn like classical guitar, or like flamenco, or totally different, aspect of it?
Excellent question. So we both played nylon strings, the classical guitar, right? We both played that because in Latin America, that's mostly often what's mostly used
Right.
is that particular guitar. And he taught me, or well, he says that I taught him, but I don't know. We both figured out how to play some of the folk rhythms from Chile, right?
Right.
And so we learned how to play a lot of Latin American styles of, there's a lot of strumming. They're very rhythmic kind of, you can, a lot of 6/8. I don't know if you or your listeners are familiar with sort of musical, but it's like 1/2/3, 1/2/3, one,
Yeah.
you know, 6/8 are fun because you can do 1/2, or you can go 1/2. Anyway, I'm not good at it, but they're like complex rhythms. So
Right.
they're very exciting. That's why you kind of get a this kind of feeling when you're listening to Latin American music. It's a exciting syncopated kind of stuff.
Well, my co-host Blake Mosley, he's a drummer, so he knows all about the time signatures. I
Absolutely.
just look at him and I'm like, huh? What are you talking about, dude? But he takes the time and tells me and everything, and I'm slowly then and I'm slowly learning all the musical
Oh.
aspects, so it's cool. It's cool. Let's go back for a minute. You said earlier that this might be your first and last book, correct?
Yes.
And okay, so let me ask you about that one, that for a minute, okay? Because I read something about you that you said, the wonderful thing about knowing that I get to do this project is I feel very liberated after that. I get to start something new, right?
You got what? I feel liberated for, I didn't like catch the last part.
Okay, the wonderful thing about knowing that I get to do this project is I feel liberated that after this, I can start something new.
Oh, right. That's true. Well,
Yeah.
I mean, I definitely, yeah.
So was this, I know that this was like a multi-year project, right, for you, right? So during those years that you were writing this book, I bet you sometimes it felt very, very stressful to you, and I guess this is that's your knowing that this is your first and last book. Is that right, or am I totally off?
No, that's a great question. So it's like, I love because you're sort of asking questions which few people ask, which is sort of the emotional process of writing a book,
Yes,
right?
because
And I
this is a
appreciate
mental health
that.
podcast.
I truly, truly appreciate that
Well,
because,
thank you very much.
no, I'm serious. I get treated like, so much of my life since I'm a professor is sort of the intellectual is separate from the person. And that's just not how I function. I'm not sure anyone does, but certainly that's not how I function. So this is absolutely a love project, which, the word love and academics don't, they don't seem to jive. But for me, it's like, this is a project of just, this is a person I have admired for literally since I was in high school, who's the words of her songs. I don't know if you're like this, but I have lyrics that kind of accompany my life. They just show up when I need them. And her songs are definitely part of my sort of inner self at this point. As she, I'll have you. Anyway, her words come to me a lot as they're beautiful poetry. And so, when I say, I don't know if I don't have anything to offer after this, I guess just for me, it's been really a life project, but a wonderful one. And times it's really hard as all of us know, there's not enough hours in the day when you're passionately involved in something because all of I have to, it turns out I also have to work for a living and I have a demanding job, which I love. But so I wrote some of this book at, from 6 to 8 in the morning, I'll be honest. Then there were moments which are kind of strange. I don't know how you, I don't know what your experience during the COVID epidemic was. But in my case, it was like this. I was so anxious that the book was a place for me to kind of go and I could hide in the 1950s and 1960s because at that point in the writing of her biography, I was at that point in her life. And so I'd go to a decade, the 1950s. I wasn't even alive in the 1950s, but I'd go to that decade and sort of lose myself in that time period so that I could have a break from our time period, which was very, I don't know about you, but I was kind of petrified throughout, especially in the beginning before the vaccine. So there was that. And then the other thing that happened that was quite amazing under COVID was a lot of libraries were shut down, but the librarians were still working. So Violeta Parra had a really interesting life. She traveled all over the world, and suddenly I'm in communication with people all over the world who are actually answering their emails because they don't have much else to do at this point. They can't go out. They can't have fun. So I have, I really feel, and this has been such a blessing to me. I feel like this has been the most amazing collective project. The generosity of librarians and archivists. I had this. I'll just get, can if I can give one example. Is that okay? I don't. So the National Library in Chile, there's a documentary about Violeta Parra, and at one point there's a screenshot I can take of a headline. I just have the headline and the date, but I don't know what newspaper it is. And so what happens is I write the head of the newspaper section of the National Library of Chile, and I said, "This is the picture. Would you happen to recognize from the type what newspaper this is?" Not only does the head of the newspaper section in Chile's National Library answer me, he finds the article and he sends it to me, and it just kind of goes on from there. And he introduces me to the widow of the woman who put together the scrapbook that where the press clipping is pasted. And I mean, the generosity and the kind of willingness, or not even willingness, I would say desire to help me on this project has been absolutely phenomenal. So I feel like I know it's my book, and I know, I literally know every single paragraph in it, but I also feel like a wonderful collective endeavor, and that's just been such a joy, to be honest.
So, what if this book is a national one? It's a number one bestseller. You have to make another book, right? I mean, we gotta follow it up with something, right?
Well, I do have another artist I would love to write about who's, I don't know if you know the Mexican singer Chavela Vargas, but if you haven't heard of her, then maybe I'll have to write a book about her.
We'll gladly have you come back on and talk about her. But for everybody who doesn't know of Violeta, she was active in her music career from 1939 to 1967. Is that correct?
Yeah, she's actually, she was actually playing music. She was actually from a family that was kind of, well established. Her father was a teacher. Her mother was had rural background. She was a kind of peasant or campesina, they call them in Spanish. But she was until her father died and the Great Depression, she was okay. And her family was okay. There's 10 kids. But then with the Great Depression kind of coincided with their father's early death, she was only 10. And their whole family is plunged into poverty. So actually, she made a living singing on the streets from about age 13 or 14 on. Her and her siblings would take a guitar and they'd go first to the marketplaces or the train station and sing for their supper, literally. They had a basket. And then it's in the south of Chile. And so there's this kind of institution called, in Spanish, it's called El Circo Pobre, the poor circus. And in English, that translates, it has a double meaning. It means it's kind of a small circus, family circus. And also, the acts are pretty bad because you have seven or eight people doing all of them, right? So it's a double meaning. It's like pretty poor and pretty poor. And so she's really, since I would say about 13 onwards, she earns her keep, as many children do, by working, and in her case by making music. And then when she goes, her brother brings her to the city, and she tries, he tries to get her to be a teacher, which is, a respectable career for a woman in that time period. And she goes to teaching school for about 2 years. It's really the equivalent of high school, and drops out to play music with her siblings. And from then on, so about age, I would say 19 on, really, how she made a living was through her music. She was also a visual artist, but as she said in one letter, artists are only appreciated when the worms are eating their bodies, their cadavers. So basically, if you want to make a living, you have to play music because at least people pay to, hear you.
Well, music is kind of like a detriment sometimes because I mean, yes, you play music and you love it what you do, but you kind of don't make anything starting out, you know? Because
No,
I
but
had it
she never
all the time, you know?
Yeah. No, and she really, because she played folk music and then her own compositions, and this is not commercial music. This is not pop, so she was always poor. But she was I don't think she would have traded. She was doing what she needed to do. She was one of those people that I think literally had no choice. She was an artist and a musician, and I don't think she understood or knew the word impossible. That was just not. And I don't think she ever, I mean, I'm quite sure that she struggled for money and tried everything she could. If they had a gig up in this town that's in a like a tax-free zone, like one of those towns on the border of Chile and Peru, she would play, and then she'd buy all sorts of, imported soaps and makeup, and then she'd go back to Santiago and sell them at her favorite cafe where she met her friends. So contraband, right? She would do things to make money, but that wasn't the purpose. The purpose was to survive and make art,
Let's go back for a minute because I wanted to ask you about you thinking about writing this book in the first place. Now, when your Chilean friends introduced you to Violeta, was it the way that they spoke about her that made you want to do a documentary about her, or did you really look into her music? I'm like, okay, well, I can kind of go along with her and feel her pain and whatever. Did I mean like what made you choose her over like everybody else? I mean, like, what was so powerful about her that you couldn't say no?
That's such a good question. Well, I mean, I think at the moment of learning her songs, I was learning all sorts of songs. I don't know about you, but I can remember the words of so many songs that I learned before I turned, let's say, 30. Like, and certainly I mean, I remember songs what I learned when I was 7 or 8. I mean, they become part of who you are. And then yes, I mean, maybe I should have said even 20. I mean, I because I would so I'm learning her songs, but I'm learning songs from, I mean, I can sing Bob Dylan, like, and they're long songs, but I know, what I'm trying to say is, like, I have I learn songs. I just love learning songs. So I don't think she was that quite yet. But I did go on to college, and we started playing Latin American music with other musicians that I met there. And then I found out that Violeta Parra, so we're always singing her songs because her songs are good songs. So if you want to like perform for other people, it's like, oh, I'm going to sing this song. It's fantastic, right? And so they were always part of our repertoire, as a musician. And then I found out, like, my senior year that she had written, she wrote her autobiography in verse, in poetry. And so I'm a senior. Sorry, I don't know how to turn off that noise.
Oh,
Let me
that's
see if
great.
I can.
It's still,
Sorry.
I don't know. No, it's all right. It's
The
all
mystery of my life. Let me see if I
good.
close this thing, that whether that helps, but let's
Okay.
find out. Okay, let's hope that that worked. So I decided to write about her because I was supposed to write a senior thesis. So I wrote about her, and it was just so interesting, and how it sort of was inspired by folklore, but it was also her own. And so I have to say, I'm going to again tell you sort of the time frame. That was in 1980 that I wrote my senior thesis. So I then went on, and I was a musician. Then I went back to school. I became a historian of Latin American history. And all this time, I've been performing her songs, thinking about her, learning about her. And when I landed my first full-time job as a tenured track professor, which is much easier than doing what I was doing before, which is called freeway flying, where I was teaching in five different colleges trying to
Ooh,
piece together a
and
living.
that was, yeah, I mean, that was fun.
When I got a job and I had an office, and it's like, and that's when I really started working, I would say, as much as I could, dedicating time to this biography. And so that's been already 20 years too, because again, I have a
Right.
job. So
Yeah.
it's a, and also I think I'd have to say I'm a little bit obsessive and meticulous. So, there's a, I like to say, two metaphors that I think about in terms of writing my book. One is, I think I mulled a lot, which I think is a reference to wine, how it ages and kind of gets sweeter. And I have to say, wine is really important in Chile. They produce the best wines. So it's all connected, right? You
Right.
can't imagine writing this book and not drinking, the wine kind of is part of the experience. I can't imagine singing her songs and not sharing wine with friends. So like, I like the mulling. I did a lot of mulling. But, and the other thing I think is, it was kind of like putting a beautiful quilt together, because I would find out different parts of her life, but then you have to kind of be able to explain it to other people. So you do
Exactly.
have kind of an order. And so that's the quilting part, is like, oh, there's this cluster, and then there's this cluster, this goes here. So it has been such a challenging and creative process to write the book, I would say.
And I know exactly what you mean about the quilt aspect of it because my mom's a quilter. She's been quilting for years and years and years. So she loves it. So I know exactly what you're talking about when you, so
Beautiful.
yeah, she's amazing. Her, I think some of her quotes got in like first place in like a state fair. So I'm like, hey, yeah,
Oh,
right on.
okay.
Yeah.
So she knows it's not like you just throw them up in the air and then,
No, it's
no, it's
all, yeah,
beautiful. Yeah, beautiful.
sometimes it takes her like weeks to plan out how it's gonna go and where to it's gonna connect, just like you said, you know?
And
Yeah.
I'm betting that she's probably unsewn certain parts. Like,
Oh
you put it there and it
yeah,
doesn't work. So,
yep.
yeah.
Yeah, because you gotta figure all that out. But I will say that I admire you also because my sister does the exact same thing you just told me about. And I hate her for this, but I love you for this because that's my sister, right? I could hate her all I want to. When you said it takes you just a few days to remember lyrics, I wish to God I could do that, you know, because back in way back when, ever since I can remember, I always had to read the lyrics or play the song over and over and over again. Yeah. Yeah, so
Yeah, I
did
don't know
this.
why they're inside me. It's sometimes it makes me laugh because it's like, I didn't know I knew that.
Yeah, so I guess you have a because everybody's brain is wired different. I guess your brain is more like you may remember songs. Do you know what I'm saying?
Oh, and you
Yeah.
should see, I'm the most unvisual person you'll ever meet.
Okay.
I can't remember faces. I'm terrible. I mean, I think there's even a word for, like, it's almost a, it's a flaw. It's like, I can meet someone 100 times and I'll be at a party and I'll introduce myself again and he'll say, we've met 10 times before. Like, it's, I have no visual recollection of his face. But, and that happens a lot. And so, and I'm the same spatially. I'll go into a restaurant's bathroom, and if I come out, there's a 50-50 chance I'll walk into the kitchen or walk back to the dining room. Like, I have no idea, like, I don't have a spatial or visual. So, but I, my words, I'm good at words,
Right,
like, I can
yes.
have. Yeah.
Yeah, my good. I'm a good speller, writer. I guess I'm a good writer. You know, I'm good at everything, but I cannot remember lyrics to save my life. You know, I gotta.
That's so funny. Yeah, we're just different. Yeah. People are. My son's a visual learner, so you know.
Got it. Yeah. Yeah.
Completely different.
Well, speaking of visual art, yes. You said that Violia did physical art too, right?
So yeah. So again, this woman who doesn't know the word for impossible.
Right.
So So if I can sort of very briefly give you the trajectory to get to her where she does the visual art, she starts out singing in circuses, literally on the street and in circuses, goes to 2 years of teaching school, can't stand it. It's a boarding school. They're all rigid. You know, they're trying to teach her to be, you know, a proper señorita. And so she goes and starts playing in bars with her siblings again. And then she's playing in bars, and she even has a few singles with her sister. They're Las Hermanas Para, which means the Para sisters, and they're doing kind of folk, I don't know, like popular folk music. And then she sort of has this epiphany that what really matters is the traditional music of Chile. And she tries to play it in bars, and her sister says, "Are you nuts?" Because in the bars, they really want to hear Mexican corridos, because by then Mexican cinema is all over Latin America.
Yeah.
And my sister says, "We just have to play what the people want, because it's a bread and butter issue." And so Violeta Tabara breaks up the duo and starts going out into the countryside 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 6 weeks, finds these elderly people that have these beautiful songs that literally you can trace back to the Middle Ages, and records them, writes them down, becomes friends with these elderly singers, the traditional singers, let's call them. But then what happens is she ends up going to Europe to a festival as this folklorist, as this collector, right? As this woman who sings traditional songs that are old and anonymous. And then in Europe, it's, you know, it's Europe. She's living, she goes to this festival, and it's in Warsaw. It's behind the Iron Curtain. But like most musicians who make it to Europe and behind the Iron Curtain, you know, the festival's over. It's 2 weeks. It's done. And she goes to Paris. Everyone goes to Paris. Who wouldn't go to Paris, right?
Who wouldn't, right? Yeah.
You know, it's where musicians, Latin American musicians can make a living in Paris. They can to this day, right? Like,
right.
Parisians want to hear everything. So she goes to Paris. She ends up in Paris with, like, you know, all of these other Latin American writers and artists, and they're all playing to make a living. And it's a very exciting time to be in Paris, because it's post-World War II, where people suffered so much, and they're just getting back on their feet. And what one musician described it, he calls it joie de vivre, this joy of living, right? He says that's what people were experiencing. And she's in, you know, these neighborhood, the Quartier Latin, the Latin Quarter of Paris, with all of the other Bohemians. And she's just, you know, down the street, there's a cafe where you can find Jean-Paul Sartre, who's this amazing, you know, playwright, and you can Simone de Beauvoir, the mother of French feminism. They're just having coffee in the cafe, you know, like everyone's there. And so she comes back to Chile, which is, you know, not Paris, let's face it. You know, Santiago is a very, you know, small colonial sort of or conservative city compared to Paris in the 50s. What can I say?
Right.
And she loves it too. I mean, no, nobody would argue with this. And she's on the boat over on the ocean liner. She starts composing these absolutely phenomenal modern sounding pieces on guitar without any musical training whatsoever, but they're fantastic. And she comes back to Chile and she starts just doing, excuse me, but whatever she wanted.
Right. Yeah.
You know, she still collects the folklore. She still wants to collect the folklore. She goes down and meets indigenous music and musicians and collects their folklore as well. But boy, is she composing, and she's writing poetry, and she's, you know, making soundtracks for experimental movies. And again, a woman who has no musical training whatsoever. And then she gets hepatitis and she can't get out of bed.
Mm.
And the doctor says, you have to stay in bed for 6 months or whatever it was. And she starts embroidering.
Yes.
That, there you go. And she starts embroidering on these burlap sacks, because that's what she has lying around. And then at one point, her daughter said they ran out of sheets and curtains. Like, they'd come home from wherever they were, and there would be no curtains in the house because their mom needed more. And she becomes this incredible visual artist as well. She paints as well. Embroidering was actually cheaper. That's because, you know, oil paints were actually quite expensive. So she becomes this visual artist. And she's already, I want to say she's in her late 30s, early 40s when she starts doing this. And 5 years later, she becomes the first Latin American artist to have a solo show at the Museum of Decorative Arts in Paris, which is actually housed in the Louvre Palace. So, which is, you know, the most famous museum probably in the world, the Louvre, right? So
right.
Everyone just says, well, she had a show in the Louvre, because she did. She had a show in the Louvre. And so, this is a kind of woman who can go from like not having painted anything in her life to having a show in the Louvre within 6 years, because she just kind of thought that people should know what she was doing. She was really something. So, she became a ceramicist, a sculptor, an embroiderer, a painter, a poet, a musician, a composer, a folklorist. And then at the very end, she opened her own sort of venue in a big circus tent, and she became a cook. So
Oh, right. She did something, right? Yeah.
she perfected the culinary arts as well.
Right. Yes. So, but going back to your visual arts, how do you think those influenced her musical compositions, like after she came back and started playing music? I mean,
Oh, that's such a beautiful question. They were absolutely intertwined. There's this part in the book where I try to sort of match them up. Like, literally, she'll have a song. She'll write a song, which is a cueca, which is a traditional rhythm, and then she'll embroider this beautiful couple dancing a cueca. And so, or she'll have a song that's the serenade that you sing to the newlyweds, and she'll have a picture of the newlyweds. But also political ones. She wrote a lot of very political songs, protest music, and so she has a song called La Carta, the letter, and it's about getting. Oh, if I can back up a little bit about her political music, because I think this is really important, and thinking a little bit about Dylan too, just how I think people are now thinking about songs a lot. And I know you always do.
I always, yeah.
So just, and I'm sure your listeners therefore do too, but her songs that are political, there's a couple things that I really love about them. One is they're always in first person. Like, she'll write a song about the conditions of the miners in Chile. And so when you think of miners in Chile, understand, I mean, and any miners anywhere, mines are usually located in desolate places because that's where the minerals are. So the miners in Chile are mining in the Atacama Desert, which is the driest place on the planet, right? And so the work conditions are pretty awful because the mine owners, yes, they want people to live there because they need workers, but they're not particularly, turning their workers' lives into resort towns, right? They just really need what matters to the mine owners is that there's workers. And so
Right.
and the workers are there because that's where the work is. And so in her song, she writes about miners. So she's not a miner, but she writes about meeting the miners and seeing the miners because she did travel to the mining camps. But what I love about her also is she always includes women in the songs because she notices them. A lot of people don't notice, there's the worker and his wife. No,
Right,
she
yeah.
sees them all, right?
Right.
She sees them. So in the same song where she talks about the conditions of the workers, and it's an amazing song, it's called Arriba quemando el sol, and the sun is beating down above, and the chorus goes, y arriba quemando el sol, and it's just kind of like you can feel the searing, the heat. It's just,
Yeah.
it's just her and a drum, and she's singing this song, and she has a whole verse about the women in the town that are waiting in line for the only water pump in the town, because that's where you get water, and you fill up your buckets, and you walk back to wherever you have to walk back with these heavy bottles of water, buckets of water. So she sees the women working as much as she sees the men working, right? And then I find that very telling about her. So all of what I love about her protest songs is she's always present. So at the end of that song, she says, "I went back to Santiago and I told everyone about what I saw."
Right.
Santiago is the capital of Chile, by the way. And then she has another song, which is this song I'm going to tell you about, La Carta, the letter, where she talks about how she got a letter and found out while she was in France that her brother was in jail, and he was in jail because he went to a protest. And so she writes this whole song about, how dare they, like, what are they thinking? People are just asking for the most reasonable things, and my brother's in jail. And then she'll paint the protest, la protesta, right? And
Right.
she'll show the carabineros, the police with their rifles, and she'll show the people protesting. So she, everything, it's almost like you could literally match up most of her artwork with a song. They're so intertwined in terms of the narrative she wants other people to know about, what she wants people to know about her country and how it works.
Well, going back to what you said about the people not recognizing women as they do now, I believe, right? So we all know that music is roughly not all the way, but a male-dominated industry, right? So, in what ways do you think that she navigated through the male-dominated industry in her time, you
God, I
know?
love this question as well. This is absolutely, these are such interesting. That is a very interesting question that I think about a lot. And I had so much fun writing this book because the other thing, which you don't know about Violetta Barra, because it's she had four kids, right? So
Four
she's
kids. Yeah,
she had
okay,
four
yeah.
kids. The last one, her youngest died, which is
Oh,
really
yeah.
hard to, we can talk about that also. But there's records of people saying, oh yeah, she came into the radio station and she was breastfeeding, which everyone thought was kind of scandal. But what do you do when you have a kid and you're a radio producer, announcer, you have your
Right.
own radio show? You bring your kid to your radio show. I mean, it wasn't, and it's so different. Male, if you wrote the biography of a male musician from Chile from her time period, you would never have to wonder where the kids are. They're with the wife or the ex-wife or the nanny. They just are. And she and her daughter, who's also a performer, they had to figure out what to do with their kids because it wasn't like they could just hand them to the guy, and they couldn't really afford nannies necessarily. They figured out answers. They sort
Right.
of, but they so these so I love that part of it. I would say this. I would say that she didn't have an easy time, partly because one of the ways that women artists broke through at that time period, and even to this day, probably in some senses, especially once you get magazines and later on television, so that the music culture also becomes visual, is you can be stunningly beautiful. And if you sing well and you're stunningly beautiful, you have a career,
Grin.
right? It
Yeah.
helps.
You got
It
a good
certainly
career, right? Yeah.
it doesn't hurt.
No.
And she was considered she this is this, I'm sorry, I'm sharing that something that might seem crude, but she had chicken pox as a child, so her face was scarred.
I had chicken pox
So,
too.
what's that?
I said I had chicken pox too.
Oh, so was your face scarred by it, or you were, or is it maybe smallpox? Which is the one that leaves you scarred? Is it
Chicken
either
pox.
the
Chicken
chicken
pox.
pox? So,
I had them twice.
oh wow,
Yeah.
but. Well, I can't see, but I'm you look fancy. You look very handsome to me, and no,
You.
and
Well,
I think you would be handsome even if your face, but I guess the way they described it was pockmarked, like
okay.
and
Yeah.
so these were not very kind or generous people necessarily would say that she wasn't beautiful, right? In
Right.
fact, say she was not beautiful. So this is something. So her looks didn't help her. So literally it had to be pure talent. And I can't describe how many times she is the only woman in the room, unless you're talking about wives and girlfriends of artists. In other words, so many times that she is literally the only woman artist in a circle of men who get tons of support from their women in their lives and have a, I would say, an easier time being recognized as artists. I think women, people accused her of being manly, right? Because she was doing what men do, which is to
Right.
be an artist, right? And so it's even interesting too, the other thing that they do when a man like her brother's this amazing poet, so he's modern and he's inventive, and she is seen as someone who everything she does is by instinct. It's all nature. It's sort of like, nature just went and sprinkled all this talent in her, and then, oh, it's just so easy. When in fact, she's an artist too, right? She's struggling. She's no different than the men artists. But for men, for some reason, they give them a certain right of authorship, like they have, which is a really authority, right? They have a say about they're the creators of what they do. This is the way society looked at it. I'm just commenting on it. And
Yeah.
her case, I'm not, condemning people for lifting up male artists, fantastic. But in her case, it was very hard for them to actually sort of attribute artistry to her. For her, it was as natural as a flower growing in the countryside, right? She was like instinctive, and all of these, instinct and what spontaneous intuition, right? Woman's intuition, all of these kinds of ways of looking at her creativity in a way are disempowering. They're saying that she it just comes out naturally and she didn't have any intentionality in it. And that really, is how she became. She was known as sort of a spontaneous, naive artist in a world where there were other artists that were modern and inventive. She actually wanted to show her art, just to give you another example. She wanted to show her art in the Museum of Modern Art in Paris. So she
Right.
writes to the director of the Museum of Modern Art, and he says this is fine and dandy, and sends her over to the Museum of Decorative Arts, which is really more about crafts, right?
Right. Yeah.
So she's an embroiderer, so it must be crafts. And so, but be clear, she considered herself a modern
Oh,
artist. She wanted to meet Picasso. He was there too, and he was in France at the same time, and she wanted to meet him. She didn't, but she wanted
She
to.
did. Oh man, that would be awesome for her to meet.
No, I know.
But going back to the male dominated and the female one, right? Well, for me, I prefer women's voices. If there's if a male voice and a female voice was covering the same song, I would automatically go to the female voice.
Interesting. So that's well, and then she has a very interesting voice. I don't know if you've got to hear her sing.
Yes, I did. Yeah.
So it's very, very expressive.
Yes.
And some people loved it and some people didn't, but it's an extremely expressive voice. And you hear it. And I love voices. I love what's beautiful about the human voice. And maybe violinists that are like really skilled can tell one violin from another, but they're sort of manufactured to be uniform, right? But
Right.
human, you can't manufacture humans to be uniform. We
No.
aren't.
Right.
So a human voice is really like a signature. Like if you hear Violetta Parra's voice, it's her.
That's it,
Like
right?
she
Yeah.
can't be anybody else, right? And
No.
so I personally love her voice. Some people called it harsh in her lifetime and since, but I think of it as more like incredibly expressive. So there's that too. I think I don't know if I have a preference for, I mean.
No, you don't. Because because female voices me always sound so soothing. It
That's
just
true.
makes me better. I guess better feeling, better this, better that. Just have a better day when I hear a female. I don't know. It's weird.
Well, I was thinking like, well, do I have a preference? And then for some reason, the person that came into my mind was Leonard Cohen, who has the most bass voice I've ever heard,
Yes.
right? So that's probably why he came in. And I wouldn't say he has a beautiful voice. I mean,
Oh
no,
yeah,
Leonard
right.
Cohen.
Yeah.
And I love his voice.
Oh
I mean, like, I
yeah.
can't
Great
imagine
voice.
anyone singing his songs better than him because
Right.
and the bass, I just so yeah, I guess I don't I think I just love certain voices or I'm sorry, but Aaron Neville. That's a voice given
Great
from
voice
God.
too. Yes, absolutely.
Although
Absolutely.
he goes pretty high, so that can be
It
soothing.
does go pretty high. I don't understand the way he gets that high, but then again, I don't have a singer voice, I have a podcast voice, so here I am doing this, so I love it. I love it
Literally.
though. But let's go back to what you said about her son passed away, right?
Yes,
So
her
when
daughter
I
with a daughter.
daughter or
Yeah.
daughter, excuse me,
Yeah.
yes. Okay, so when I looked her up, I couldn't help but see this. Okay, so she died February 5th, 1960, age 49. Okay. And I
Yeah.
read somewhere that in 1967, she died from a self-inflicted gunshot wound. Was that because of the daughter passing away, or was it like completely, because that let's call it what it is. That's suicide, right?
Yeah, is this suicide?
Right.
We were
Yeah.
using the word suicide. I was wondering if we needed to also
Oh
talk
yeah.
about.
Yes. Because I think everybody needs to know about just talk about suicide. Because if we get it more out there, it's okay for more people to come to me or you and say, "Hey, I need help with this," because everybody is not, yeah, so I wanted to know, yeah.
So what I would say is this. Violeta Parra suffered probably what is the greatest tragedy that any person can suffer, which is the death of a child.
Yes,
I really
yes.
believe that. And I do, as her biography, I've had to think. So she did shoot herself, which, speaking of gender and men differences between men and women, women tend to not shoot them. That tends to be a very male way of committing suicide, sadly. And a very much more definitive than, for example, taking sleeping pills. If you an overdose of sleeping pills can sometimes be reversed, right?
Yes,
A bullet
sometimes.
to the head is there's no reversing. So
No. Yeah.
she did She did actually have several attempts on her life before this. I mean, I think when I write about her suicide, I said two things about it. One is that it's was almost expected. I mean, it was, and the other was that it was also unfathomable because it's never, how can we ever understand someone making that decision, right? And so well, two things. One is what I'll start with the best explanation I've heard about this. About why people commit suicide is not, from what I've understood, it's not because they want to die. They don't want to die. It's because they want the pain to stop. And so I feel like for her, that makes sense to me. That so I think she was probably the diagnosis didn't exist in her lifetime, but I think today she would have probably been diagnosed as bipolar. So she had these incredible highs, and her lows were beyond the low, right? And so there's that. But the way I explain it, I think she explains also in a strange way, my way of explaining her suicide, since I feel like I'm going to be asked about it as her biography, but again, I think it's unfathomable, right? So I'm being asked about something that none of us can truly understand.
Right.
Yeah, so she has a song, and at the end, she repeats this phrase. Like about three or four times, getting slower or slower, and it goes, "Yo no tengo dónde estar," and that means, and so this—it's the end of this incredible, or it's part of this incredible piece that she's written. But the lines mean, "I have no place to be." I feel like that kind of, she found the words to explain it better than I ever could, right?
Right.
Because her life was so hard, because she's, a woman in a men's world, because she's not particularly attractive in a world that really, values woman's beauty, because she's, or she's a mother, but one of her children have died. There's just a hundred. Oh, because she's making music and she's writing these incredible songs, and she's in her 40s, and it's the youth revolution. It's the 60s. She's
Right.
over 21. You can't trust her, right? Her
Right.
children. Her children are, becoming superstars, and she's the mother of the superstars. So because it's not her fault. She's over 21. She's 40. In her 40s. She's 47. She's 48. It's like, and again, this is a woman who did not accept the impossible. So she, I have wonderful. There's a picture of her in this youth magazine. It's called The Corner of Youth. I mean, it's a youth magazine, and there's a picture of her wearing go-go boots, and she's 48. And you just have to go, this woman, nothing stopped her. Like, oh, I like those. I'm going to wear them. Yeah.
Where was she like, I mean, 'cause I tell everybody, you can't always understand the way that other people perceive you. If you like it, you like it, I don't know. It's, it's all, I don't know what I'm trying to say. But for all of our listeners right now, you can go to www.whenwordsfailmusicspeaks.com and go to our crisis page. We
That is
have crisis helplines and 24/7 support. So please feel free to go there. It's totally free. Just click on the link right there, and I'll take you right there if you need help with anything at all. So yeah. So thank you for that. We have two more quick questions for you, if you don't mind.
Oh, no, yes.
All right, these are going to be fun, okay? All
Yeah,
right.
no,
All right, so well, actually three of them, if you don't mind. I'm sorry. Okay, so Amanda likes to ask this question all the time, okay? Let's go back to your childhood, okay? You're in your teens, you're sitting in your room. What posters on the wall are you looking at?
Oh my God. I'm looking at my sister. My sister did this self-portrait for like some art class, and it's orange and blue. And
Okay.
it's, for some reason, it's in my room. I don't understand it, but that would be one. Oh God, I don't know. That's a
Do
great
you have
question.
any? Do you have like any music posters of your favorite artists from back then? And you know?
Didn't. I had, albums, I can
Well,
tell you. I'm so bad at favorite. I have the strangest
They're all
eclectic
good.
taste in the world. I never know what to say when people say, "Who's your favorite music?" And if I told you all of the different kinds of music I like, it wouldn't make any sense to anyone. Mostly though, I yeah. So I mean, it was I can't. I wish I could answer that question honestly,
Yeah, yeah.
and I can't. I don't know how
Yeah.
to. I loved all. I think I particularly like music with lyrics that are moving, that make me, like, I guess because I like to sing and play the guitar,
Yeah.
I have songs for how I feel, right? So if
Right.
I'm in a bad mood, I'll sing all my sad songs, and if I'm in a happy mood, I'll sing all my happy songs, or maybe I'll sing my sad happy songs when I'm in a bad mood to try to cheer me up, or but I have songs about how the kind of reflect, or maybe I'll be angry and I'll sing angry songs, but I
Yeah.
kind of I think of singing and playing guitar as therapeutic,
Well, yeah,
besides also beauty. But
it's very therapeutic, yeah. And that beautifully will transition to our last question, okay? So I always ask this question every time I have a fantastic guest like you on. So thank you very much for coming on too. Yeah, this is great. But to go off what you said of your last question is you don't know who your favorite artist is. Okay. I was gonna ask you your top four, the Mount Rushmore, but I don't think you can because my top four switches automatically from minute to minute. Who knows? So I'm not gonna do that to you.
Thank
But
you. I appreciate that. Yeah.
yeah, okay. Perfect. But you said something earlier about if you're feeling sad, what music would you listen to? Okay. My last question for you right now is there an artist, album, or song that you can listen to, but you can't tell me or your friends or your family how it makes you feel deep inside your soul?
Because it's like there's no words to describe
There's
it.
no words to describe what you're hearing or feeling at that time that you listen to that one particular artist, album, or song.
I'm going to give you a song. There's a song. So there's an artist. He's Brazilian, and his name is Milton Nascimento. I don't know if you've ever heard of him, but he's amazing. And he does this. He writes great songs. But he did this recording with these three women, and because you're putting me on the spot, I'm not going to remember. But the song is
It always
Sound
happens like that.
and
Yeah.
I'm gonna that always happens, but there are three women and they sing a cappella and they sing with Milton Nascimento and they sing the song São Vicente, and I'm just gonna look for it on
Sure.
Spotify
Yeah.
because I can't leave you without not knowing.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, that would be so wrong. So let me look fine. So Milton Nascimento, Trio Esperanza. I didn't even have to look. The
Okay.
minute I thought about it came to me.
Perfect. It just
Trio
comes. Yeah.
Esperanza. Esperanza means hope, and it's spelled Esperanza. And if you look up Trio Esperanza, and then you look up Saint Vicente, S, which means Saint Vincent. So that should get you close enough. And they sing this song a cappella, and I think I don't have words, but I know that the first time I heard it, I found it so incredibly beautiful, the arrangement, the fact that their voices were the only instruments, and then Milton has this voice that truly is, Aaron, if I said Aaron Neville, but I could have said Milton Nascimento. I think,
Yeah.
like, these are voices that are gifts from God. There's no other way to explain where the voice comes from. And I'm getting goosebumps trying to describe it.
Oh.
So it's what I it's when I hear that song, I am, over, like literally, like arrangement of their voices weaving together, of his low voice and their incredible harmonies. I mean, it's just it gets me every time.
Great.
I'm trying. I keep on glancing up because I have my books in front of me here, and I want to read a quote from Violeta
Oh.
Parra, which I might just paraphrase because I'm not seeing the book. That no, I found it. I found it. I want to read a
Oh,
quote
good.
from her
Okay.
about healing and
Yeah.
music. Okay, so I went off frame and I did something wrong, but who cares? Okay,
Okay.
here we go. I found it.
Okay.
Okay, here it comes. She's talking about music. It is like the return of the human soul to all of the things that matter.
Yeah, how perfect is that, right?
Ugh.
How perfect is that?
That's the power of music. It returns our souls to everything that matters.
Yes, music does wonderful things. It can heal you from heartbreak, make you happy, just by one note, because my friend Ben, who is a jazz musician, he interviewed one of his buddies, and his buddies say you could hear the happiness, the sadness from note to note to note, and that's
Wow.
true. Yeah.
Well, and then I would say also, It's good for ourself and our souls, and it's also absolutely good for community. I mean, there's nothing like singing with other people. Yeah, none of
Absolutely. Yeah.
yeah. So for this,
Even though that I can't sing, I love to sing in the car, you know. I'm pretty sure that I'm drowning out my you know, they're like, "Stop it, James, stop singing." I'm like, "No, I can't help it." You know, it's such a great motivation tool, you know. So yeah. So all right. So okay, so for everybody listening, you can go to ericaverba.com and you can
That's correct.
pre-order the book Thanks to Life, the biography of Violeta Parra. I know I said her name wrong, but hey, you know, it's okay. Yeah.
Fine. I'm
You
sure
can.
she would appreciate that we are talking about her so many years. This would be, yeah.
Yes. And you can also pre-order it on Amazon right now, correct?
Correct.
Yes.
Absolutely.
And it comes out on January 14th, 2025.
Does it really
So
does?
I'll get this. I'll definitely get this episode out tomorrow or the next day, so people can anticipate the book. So,
Oh, you're so welcome.
and are we on like all platforms? Can people find you on like Twitter, Facebook, and all those
I'm
other fun stuff?
mostly good at Facebook. I'm good at Facebook and Instagram, and my name is very un so I'm lucky that my name is kind of unusual. You can see the spelling, I think. Erica Verba, ERICKA, and then Verba, which is verb with an A at the end of it. And because my name is unusual, I'm easy to find on
Right, which is
all of
great. Right.
them. Yeah. As long as you remember my name, you're fine.
There you go. Yes, man. So we honestly love you here, and we honestly
Oh.
do want you to come back anytime you want to. It's been
Okay.
such an honor learning about Miss Violet and you coming on. So, yeah. So thank you
Okay,
very much.
it's been such a treat. I really, truly appreciate you. Thank you so
Yes,
much for
man. Thank you very
the
much.
lovely
Okay.
conversation.
All
Great
right.
question. I really
Thank
appreciate
you. Thank you. And with
it.
that said, everybody, always remember when words fail, music speaks. Hi, guys.